the person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or has a worm on the vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and gives up the one he had before. So this is just the explanation of how one goes from body to body. In the previous verse, Vasudeva explained that we have to give up the body because it dies and all the elements merge back into the elements and the body is gone. And then we get another body according to our karma. What is the process? The process is not random. Just as a person walking on the road does not put his foot forward randomly. He has a goal in mind when he's walking. He is going to a certain place. Or the other example given here is the bug or the worm on the leaf going to another leaf. He moves in a certain direction and then transfers himself onto the next leaf. So he has a certain purpose in mind. The living entity, of course, in getting another body, usually does not have a goal in mind because he is in ignorance. But nevertheless, the plan is already there because of the karma. So his body is decided for him, and in that sense, he's going in a certain direction. So in other words, taking the next body is not a random affair. He, of course, is not making the decision at the moment, but nevertheless, there is a plan behind his movement out of this body into another body. Why does he have to leave this body? One, the karma of that body is finished. Why does he have to go to another particular body? Because there is karma to put him in that body. Yeah? So it's not that he randomly dies and randomly just jumps into another body. So therefore, there is a plan behind this whole movement from body to body. It is not a random affair. And this is a credit to the intelligence of the Supreme Lord. The law of karma is a just law. Just as in a country, they make laws which are reasonable. They're not unreasonable laws. And the punishment that is given for a crime is reasonable. It's according to the type of crime and the intention and the violence and whatever, or the ignorance of the individual. So many factors are taken into consideration in allotting punishment. So there is some just laws in the state. So similarly, the law of karma is a very just law. It is very similar to the laws of the state, but it is more encompassing because the laws of the state do not include all the types of sinful activity that are included in the law of karma. Yeah? So the law of karma is more encompassing. In fact, every act you do gets a reaction. In the state, that's not so. Only when you do a very bad act, it's called criminal, then you get the reaction. Otherwise, you go on with your life every day, and there's no reaction to that at all. They don't do anything to you for that. But according to the law of karma, every act you do gets some result in the future. So that's this is all-encompassing. Some of the results are good, and some of the results are bad, according to the type of activity. So in the country, of course, they only catch you for the bad acts. They don't reward you for the good acts. Individuals may reward you, but the government doesn't do anything about that in most cases. So the law of karma in that way is also more encompassing, that it also rewards you for your good activities as well as your bad activities. And it also includes all of your activities, not just some of your activities. And unlike the governmental
mechanism for enforcing justice. The law of karma is in no way influenced by anyone. So, of course, in the government, you can always bribe the judge or do this or have a good lawyer, and then you can get a lesser sentence than you should get because of certain corruption there. But the law of karma is not like that. You can bribe nobody. You can't influence anybody. The decisions are made independently of the individual, and individual cannot be represented by anybody. Why? Because the witness is already there. Paramatma is the witness, Yamaraj is the witness, the day and the night are the witness, so many witnesses are there. And therefore, the judgment is made based on the full knowledge of one's activities. So in this way, it is a little different from the laws of the country also. In this way, the next body is prepared partially by this body and the acts you do in this body, and also by all the previous bodies before. Some of the karmas from previous bodies will be reflected or experienced in the next body, not only the karmas of this lifetime. Some of the karmas of previous lifetimes will also be put into the next body. So that total of all your other previous activities and your karmas, plus the karmas from this lifetime, combine to produce the next body. So going into the next body is therefore not a whimsical choice of the Supreme Lord or Yamaraj or anybody. It is natural, a natural result of your previous activities due to the law of karma. So this present body also must end according to karma, previous karmas. So when this body ends according to previous karmas, then the next body is decided in terms of the karmas that you've done in previous lifetimes and this lifetime. And there's no question of escaping that. So in this way, we go from body to body to body to body. We have unlimited aparabdha karmas piled up from previously that have to be experienced in future lifetimes. Plus, we are accruing new karmas in this lifetime, many of which will not even be experienced in the next body. There may be many bodies later. So in this way, we can never exhaust all of our karmas. Our one life will only hold so many karmas, and then there's other piles of karmas. Plus, we're accruing new karmas in excess of one lifetime. So therefore, passage from body to body to body continues forever in the material world because of this. So this is the position of the living entities, but as a human being, there is a little bit of a exception here, because as a human being, we get the choice of our activities in spite of the body we get as a human being, and in spite of all the circumstances we're put into due to karma, we have a choice of the activity. Sometimes the choice is very limited. Sometimes the choice is we can do many more things according to our past karmas. Just as if you're in the prison, you don't have so many choices. You cannot choose what to eat. They just give you some food and you have to eat it. You do have a choice though. You can either eat it or not eat it. But you don't have a choice of what food. Similarly, you cannot choose when to go out and take some exercise in the grounds. That is all regulated. But once you get there, you can either exercise or not exercise. And again, going to sleep at certain hours for sleeping. If you want, you can sleep. If you don't want, you don't have to sleep. So there's some limitation, but there's some freedom to choose even within that situation in a prison house. Okay. So that is the position in the human body. We are confined in a human body, which gives us one limitation. We cannot do whatever the birds do or the fish do, etc., or the animals. We have a certain limitation on the activities we do due to the capacity of the human body. Okay. And then we get extra karmas beyond that. Some bodies are more limited than others. People are born who cannot walk. People are born who cannot see. People are born who cannot hear. So they have more limitations. That's physical limitations. Then we have limitations according to the gunas. Some people have more ignorance. They're in tamogun. Some people are born into rajogun. Some people are born into sattvagun. So those who are born in tamogun are more limited. Why? Because all their choices will be in ignorance. So when we say choice, yes, everybody has a choice, but if you keep choosing ignorant things, you tend to commit more sinful activities and you sink down into lower species of life. And then you have no choice at all. If you are in sattvagun, you have clear intelligence. And you can understand the difference in body and soul. You accept the principles of Dharma, etc. So your choice is much clearer in sattvagun. So, nevertheless, as a human being, even the people in tamogun get responsibility for their actions. Whether they choose ignorance or not ignorance or whatever, still, they get the results, they get their karma because of that. So, the human beings have some limitation. But, still, this does not absolve them. There's no excuse. Said, well, I because I'm ignorant, therefore I shouldn't have responsibility for my choices. They may be ignorant, nevertheless, they can do something about that ignorance as well. One, they can consult somebody who has knowledge and take his advice, for instance. They can follow another person. So that, of course, is in the Varna Ashram system, that is what the Sudra does. He is not given the choice, free will completely. He is under a master, and the master will make all the decisions for him. So he doesn't have to really decide too much. So that is, of course, his choice, whether he wants to do that or not. So anyway, the individual, even in tamogun, has to make his choices. And if he makes certain choices, even in tamogun, he can change his position in the gunas. So we have a choice. We can eat tamogun food, rajogun food, or sattvagun food. Even if you're in tamogun, you can make that choice. And if you choose sattvagun food, then that will start to change your gunas. And if you eat rajogun food, that will change your gunas also. If you eat tamogun food, you stay in tamogun. You can choose your environment. So you choose a sattvic environment instead of a tamogun environment. That will also alter your guna slightly. So instead of being completely tamogun, you'll get some higher influence on you. So in this way, even in tamogun, we make certain choices. We can begin to alter the gunas. And this way, we can begin to also alter our intelligence and our consciousness, etc. So therefore, everything is not fixed. In the human being, he has the opportunity to change his situation due to his free will. He can change certain aspects of this lifetime, and he also gets the opportunity to change next lifetime. Of course, that is there in any case. But if we don't have knowledge of next lifetime and what constitutes a good next body and what are the activities that lead to a next good body, then everything is very random. We don't really choose a next body in that sense. But when we can understand what activities of this lifetime will lead to a better lifetime next lifetime, and we choose those activities, then we can prepare for next lifetime. So the general proposition in karma yoga is that you avoid the sinful activities and you do more punyas, and this will guarantee next lifetime is better, and even this lifetime gets better. Both. Yeah? So that is the one of the impetuses of the whole system of Varnashram, to encourage people to avoid this sin and increase their punyas. And in this way, gradually their consciousness elevates through the gunas. So that is the position of karma yoga. But as I mentioned previously, there is a limit to karma yoga. It just elevates you in the gunas till you get to sattva-guna. But as we know, Krishna says, even that is impermanent. And even if you go to Svargaloka and live for thousands of years, then that enjoyment and that peace is also interrupted because you have to give up that body again. So it is not a permanent solution. So the other solution is mukti. Get rid of the material body completely. So that can be done if one comes to sattva-guna and one realizes one is not the body, but one is the atma, and then one begins to perform a jnana yoga or astanga yoga. Then one can get free from the material body. One gets liberation. That also, if we succeed at the end of our life in attaining that state of liberation, then that becomes permanent. If in our life we are a jivan mukta, we can fall from that state again. But if we actually leave our body in that condition, then we can get a permanent state of mukti. And that is celebrated in the Upanishads, that liberation is eternal. So therefore, people will think, that is the final goal. We have the different goals, artha, dharma, kama, and we have moksha. So after going through the karma, then people tend to think that when we get moksha, then that is a solution to everything. But of course Lord Chaitanya says, no, there's a higher, the fifth goal is prema. Of course, we could say that's another type of moksha. It includes moksha in it, but it is an addition to the moksha attained by jnana and yoga, which is mere sayujya mukti. Yeah? So, therefore, the real goal is not simply to get out of the karma of the material body through jnana or yoga, but to reach a state of prema through the process of bhakti. And then automatically destroys the bondage of karma, etc. So here, Vasudeva is giving a summary of the Vedic knowledge of how we transmigrate from body to body, and the bodies die, inevitably due to karma. And ultimately, the soul does not die in that whole process. It simply gets another body. But this whole process continues because of the ignorance, or the avidya, the ajnana, which is present in that jiva. In spite of the fact that he is a conscious being, he has ignorance. And therefore he continues this whole process of going to body, body to body. So getting out of the body is by getting knowledge, opposite of ignorance. So that jnana takes two forms. Knowledge that I'm not the body, I'm atma, by which we get mukti. The other knowledge is knowledge of the Supreme Lord, which is bhakti, and by which we get prema. So we have the Gyan Kanda of the Upanishad. The Upanishads are called the Gyan Kanda of the Vedas. And the Brahmanas or Aranyakas are called the Karma Kanda. For sacrifices for going to Svargaloka. So that Gyan Kanda has two portions. One part of the jnana is not the body, which leads to Brahman realization. The other part of the jnana is bhakti, a knowledge of the Supreme Lord, which leads to prema. So we should not think that Gyan Kanda is only impersonal. It has the personal portion also, the bhakti portion, which leads to prema. So therefore in the Vedas we get artha, dharma, kama, moksha and prema. However, people in general think of moksha and liberation and jnana simply as getting out of the material world. Okay? But the higher position is to get knowledge of the Supreme Lord and to get prema. So that is also there in the Upanishads. So that is by attaining that position of bhakti and not striving just for liberation, but striving to serve the Lord, automatically the liberation is attained. So along with the getting free from karma, which is done through Sayujya Mukti, one also gets spiritual prana, salokya, one also gets spiritual body, sarupya, one also gets spiritual powers, samnipya, sarshti, one also gets closeness to the Lord, samnipya. So all the types of liberation are included in one sense in the when we do pure bhakti and attain prema. But if in the process of bhakti we desire these different things, then that weakens the whole process and the ananda becomes quite limited. Okay? So therefore, the scriptures recommend the practice of pure bhakti, the sadhana of pure bhakti, where we reject all desires, including the desire for liberation, the desire for any of these types of liberation, and we simply concentrate on pleasing the Supreme Lord and serving the Supreme Lord. Then we get the higher relationships with the Supreme Lord in Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya, and that produces higher bliss. So that is a summary of the Bhagavad philosophy. Everyone is not capable of understanding that, and especially a person like Kamsa. So Vasudev concentrates on the first portion only, that you're not the body and your body dies, etc. So at least understand that your body is temporary, so you should not be too concerned about if someone predicts that you're going to die at a certain time, because you're going to die anyway. So that's the extent that Kamsa can understand. All these other things, even that you're the soul is eternal, even that is very difficult for someone like Kamsa to understand. Why? Because of great material attachment, which means ignorance. It is very difficult for him to understand that there is a soul, what to speak of there is a God. And because of that ignorance, he became a big demon. And he ignored the principles of Dharma completely and persecuted the Yadus and others and wouldn't follow the system that was set up previously by the Manus. So therefore his capacity to understand all this is quite limited, and ultimately he will just take advantage of whatever portions he can to save his name, so to speak.
The question regarding guna and karma, the relationship, when somebody is a low guna, he performs low karma, low type of activities. Higher guna, like satoguna, he performs a higher karma. So how is guna and karma related, each other?
Well, if we're in the lower gunas, our choices are quite limited because we do everything in ignorance. So that means ignorance, we may do a good activity, but it is very likely we're going to do a bad activity, a sinful activity, because we're in ignorance. We don't understand, we're not the body, we don't understand scripture or anything, and we want to fulfill our desires, so we'll do anything, and it may be okay, it may be sinful, we don't know. And therefore, quite limited in his choices, because he is in ignorance. And he cannot understand all these things about scripture and sin and punya, etc. Nevertheless, because he's a human being, he still has some responsibility. So in the Varnashram system, though the rules for sudras are less than the rules for brahmanas, still there are principles for all the people. to follow. Eh? They have to have honesty and, you know, sincerity, and so many good qualities have to be there. These have to be cultivated even in the people of ignorance. Yeah? So they're not exempt from do anything you want. No. They do have some principles to follow also. And that's their responsibility. If they don't follow those principles, then their employer will punish them or whatever like that. Okay? So, yes, they are quite limited according to guna. The activities they do consequently are tamoguna activities in general. At the same time, they have to avoid sin as much as possible. If they follow the varnashram system. If they don't follow any system, of course, then it is very random. And their progress in life is probably not going to be there. They're going to degrade themselves. So therefore, the varnashram system has that advantage of regulating everybody, including the people who are in tamoguna, to raise them up. And if they don't follow those rules, they tend to sink down. So people in the lower modes tend to do more simple activities. Yeah? Senses are less controlled, and the attachment to the body is more. And as one rises through the gunas, attachment to the body is less, and likelihood of doing sinful activity becomes much less. So therefore, if one reaches sattva-guna, then it is very natural that he is detached from material enjoyment because he understands it's not the body. Okay? So it becomes very easy for him to follow all the rules and regulations of scripture. It is not a problem for him. Okay? So he can, his guna of sattva-guna makes him do activities which are non-sinful and constitute a lot of punya. So that is the nature of the different persons. But to safeguard everything, everybody has to follow some rules. So therefore we have rules for sudras, rules for vaishyas, rules for kshatriyas, and rules for brahmanas. In order that they rise above their gunas by restriction on their activities.
So you find a contrast between Kamsa and Murgari Hunter. Murgari Hunter was a lower guna, killing all the animals. But he was able to understand Narada Muni's preaching and he became a good devotee. But Kamsa, though he was in tamoguna and rajoguna mode, lower mode, also he was giving a higher principle. He never accepted.
Yeah. Well, Murgari was not particularly an asura in the sense that he was opposed to the Lord and committed offense against devotees, as Kamsa did. Kamsa hated the concept of Supreme Lord, concept of Vishnu. He hated all the yadus and devotees. So in that sense, Murgari was ignorant, definitely, and he was doing sinful activity, but he was not an aparadi and a demon in the sense that Kamsa was. And he got the mercy of Narada Muni, and therefore he could advance very nicely.
Maharaj, you explaining this jnana section. In one section, you know, this that Brahman, they realize Brahman and they go to, they get a mukti, that impersonal Brahman. But jnana, it destroys the prarabdha karma. It doesn't destroy the aprarabdha karma. Am I correct?
No, ultimately it destroys all karma. But the prarabdha karmas you have to experience in this lifetime, and once you die, they're finished.
And the work of jnana, that means destroy the prarabdha karma, this lifetime, whatever.
Aprarabdha are gone, prarabdhas are finished with the end of this lifetime. After you give up your body, then you get mukti.
That is the work of jnana also?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Prarabdha karmas are only of this lifetime, so if you give up your body, all your prarabdha karmas are finished. But jnana does not claim to destroy your prarabdha karmas. So you have to continue with this body, with it, all your karmas, and then after you've experienced everything and given up your body, your prarabdha karmas are finished.
But it will take so much lifetime for the jnana, you know. Because one by one you have to get the body, you have to destroy the karma. Because only destroying the prarabdha karma, not aprarabdha karma. Jnana, the impersonal jnana, you know, not the personal jnana. It takes so much lifetime.
Yeah.
And so many like again you have to bow, take again.
Yeah, that's destroying the upper of the karma. It's not all destroyed at once, so they take many lifetimes to do that. Each lifetime, your prabdha karmas get destroyed.
Yeah, again, aprabdha is coming again.
But the aprabdha will come and become aprabdha in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Until you destroy that by living it, experiencing it.
So how will they get liberation? It will take so much lifetime for them.
Yeah. So that's why it's considered kleshadikara, full of suffering.
Jnani, Arthartim, Jignyasu. That Jnani refers to the, you mentioned two Jnanis, Jnana is a Brahman and Bhakti. So Krishna refers to the Bhakta there, the fourth Jnani.
There is a different interpretation there. Obviously, if he's simply a Jnani, it can't be so because he's talking about devotees there, people who recognize the Lord. If he's simply a Jnani, he would not even recognize the Lord. But we can say he is a Gyanisra Bhakti, you could say that he is somewhat influenced by Jnana and detached from material things, and he accepts the Supreme Lord. He does not have desire for material benefits. So there's no Sakkarma or a Karma Misra Bhakti. But we could say that he is a Gyan Misra Bhakti or something like that. So that is one interpretation. The other is a Jnani simply means a Bhakta, who's doing pure Bhakti. So an example of the Jnana Misra Bhakti is like the Kumaras, for instance, where someone is in Karma Misra Bhakti is like Dhruva or Gajendra. Example of Jagasus is the sages of Naimisaranya.
Thank you.